Today's Between the Rows podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Gowan Canada, the go-to company. Gowan's herbicide portfolio includes Avidex and Fortress, which control Group 1 and Group 2 resistant wild oats. Don't let wild oats rob your yields. Use Avidex and Fortress to stop them in their tracks. Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications. Today, we focus on canola, with Jennifer Blair of Alberta Farmer Express filling us in on crush activity.
We've heard a lot of reports of storage problems, including heating and spoilage. So this high demand from crushers is giving producers an opportunity to move some of that risky grain off the farm.
Alan Dawson of Manitoba Cooperator investigates whether Canada's transportation system can keep up with production.
There seems to be a growing interest in Asia, Southeast Asia, for Canadian canola meal, according to Chris Vervey.
And finally, the Western producer's Darce McMillan offers his views on where the market's headed.
So the pulse industry here is really very concerned that this could disrupt a trade that last year amounted to more than $1 billion.
That's all on Between the Rows with this week's host, Shannon Van Rays.
Hello, and welcome to Between the Rows, Glacier Farm Media's weekly podcast. I'm Shannon Van Rays, and I'll be your host this week as we take a look at the good, the bad, and even the contradictory when it comes to canola, asking the question, who's crushing it and who isn't? Jennifer Blair of Alberta Farmer Express has been looking into the domestic canola situation, and she joins us now from Red Deer. Jennifer, welcome to Between the Rows.
Thanks so much for having me, Shannon.
Jennifer, before we get into how much canola is being crushed this winter, I did want to ask you, what harvest conditions, what were they like last fall, and how has that impacted canola quality?
Well, I know that harvest conditions all across the prairies were very wet last fall. I know in Alberta, some pockets in northern Alberta and across southern Alberta, most farmers were able to get their crops off, but across central Alberta and some parts of northern Alberta, there's still a lot of canola crop in the field. I think we've got about 15% of Alberta's canola crop still in the field. And the crop that did come off was in relatively poor condition. So we've heard a lot of reports of storage problems, including heating and spoilage. So this high demand from crushers is giving producers an opportunity to move some of that risky grain off the farm.
Wow. So how busy have crushers been? How much is the crush up this year over last year?
Well, last week, Canadian crush levels were a little over 188,000 tons, which is a slight dip from the high of about 200,000 tons we saw in the first week of January. At this same time last year, they were crushing only about 154,000 tons. So to date, they've crushed about 4.7 million tons so far this year, which is up from 4.1 million tons at the same time last year.
So Jennifer, what is that as a percentage? Are we on track here for a new crush record?
Yeah, so that's about a 14% jump over the same time last year, which definitely puts us on track for a new crush record this year. So right now, crushers are running at about 88% capacity, and at the same time last year, they were only running at about 83% capacity.
Wow, so how important is it for farmers to get this canola sold before spring, given that there's so much moisture out there?
Well, they're in a bit of a race against time. With the quality potentially deteriorating in the bins, if they can move it out of the bins and off the farm, they're going to take that opportunity.
And if crushers weren't, you know, if there wasn't this capacity to take it in, what would producers be doing? What other options are available to them?
Well, I expect that they would be crossing their fingers and doing whatever they could to keep the quality up to move it into the seed market. I think that's probably really their only other option at this point.
Excellent. Well, Jennifer, thank you for taking the time to join us on Between the Rows. You've given us lots to think about.
Thanks again for having me.
While canola crushers may be working at a blistering pace on the prairies, some are concerned that Canada's transportation sector isn't keeping up. So next we're going to speak to Alan Dawson of the Manitoba Cooperator, and he's been looking into the claim that there's insufficient export capacity on the West Coast. Now, Alan joins me from Miami, Manitoba. Alan, thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Alan, who's raising the alarm about this?
Thomas Mielke, who's the publisher of Oil World, based in Hamburg, Germany, raised this issue at Ag Days recently in Brandon, Manitoba.
Okay, and what does he see as being the main problem here?
Well, he raised a concern about the export capacity or a lack of it relative to the potential export market for canola meal. Specifically, he talked about being a lack of capacity at Vancouver, and also alluded to some of the problems Canada has had with lacking railway capacity.
Now, Alan, obviously that's the Europeans' perspective, and this gentleman's based in Germany. So I'm wondering, what do Canadians in the canola industry have to say about this? Do they also feel there's a lack of export capacity?
Well, Christopher Vey, who's the executive director of the Canadian Oilseed Processors Association, acknowledges that there is a lot of meal being exported from Canada, but unlike Mr. Mielke, he doesn't think that we've been losing any sales or any markets. But he, Chris Vervey, says there's an opportunity for sure to expand our canola meal exports.
Okay, and traditionally most canola meal goes to the U.S., but China and Asian markets are also, you know, playing a role now. How is that expected to change export?
Yeah, there's been a big jump recently in meal exports to China. You know, looking at the first 11 months of 2016, the U.S. imported 3.2 million tons of Canadian canola meal. During the same period, China imported 597,000 tons, and if you look at the year before, in 2015, China had imported 0 tons of Canadian canola meal. So there's been a big jump there, and there seems to be a growing interest in Asia, Southeast Asia, for Canadian canola meal, according to Chris Vervey.
And Vancouver is growing. I know there have been moves for some new terminals there. Tell us what Canadian industry is doing to increase export capacity currently.
Well, several of the grain companies with grain terminals in Vancouver have expanded their grain transportation capacity or grain export capacity. Richardson's, for example, Viterra has done some work, and of course, G3 has announced that it's going to be building a brand new state-of-the-art terminal there. Patterson Global Grain and Parrish and Heimbecker are working on a new facility as well. So there's been quite a bit of activity amongst the grain companies, but there is some talk that a couple of companies in Vancouver will be looking at expanding on the canola meal side.
Alan, is there anything that the federal government can do to improve the situation, or you know, in legislation or regulation that might aid in this process?
Well, you know, there's quite a bit of discussion around that regarding rail capacity, and there's a hope amongst many in the industry, including farmers and the Grain Elevator Association, that the government make amendments to the Transportation Act, the Canadian Transportation Act, to increase and enhance railway capacity. In terms of export capacity, I'm not sure that's necessarily in the federal domain in terms of its ability to influence export capacity from Vancouver, but there certainly is some discussion around or hope that perhaps local authorities could move a bit more quickly around zoning issues, environmental hearings, those kinds of things, in terms of expediting the building and expanding of port capacity in Vancouver. There's a lot of hoops that these companies have to go through to expand or to build new capacity in Vancouver. So from the government point of view, it might be local authorities in terms of export capacity at the port, and then on the rail side, that would certainly be under the federal jurisdiction and fall under the Transportation Act that the current federal government is saying it will look at amending this spring.
Alan, thank you very much for sharing this information with us. We appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
Alan Dawson is a writer with the Manitoba Cooperator. He spoke to us today from Miami, Manitoba. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Shannon Van Rays. Joining me now with a look at the markets is Darce McMillan, markets editor with the Western Producer. Darce, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here, Shannon.
You know, I wanted to ask you, it seems like there's some major developments in India right now. Are those going to affect pulse markets?
This is going to be our front page story this week, Shannon. As of March, India is going to require that all imports of pulses be fumigated at the point of departure. Now, actually, this has been a rule that has been in place for a number of years now, but India has been for several years, since 2004, India has been granting Canada an exemption from the rule. So this meant that the pulse shipments left Canada, and when they arrived in India, that's where they were fumigated. The chemical used in this fumigation process is methyl bromide, and there's a problem with that. It's banned in Canada and many other countries because it hurts the ozone layer. Now, India isn't a big fan of methyl bromide either. It wants to stop using it, but it also has another problem, too. It wants to protect its onion and garlic crops from possible contamination within these pulse shipments. It's worried about a specific nematode that really could devastate its huge onion and garlic crops there. Now, an additional problem in this is that not only there's an environmental problem with methyl bromide, but also it here in Canada, it just doesn't work very well because of our cold winters. Now, there is an alternative that if this new rule came into place, that Canada perhaps could divert pulse shipments to Singapore, and it could get them fumigated there. But that would add another $100,000 to each shipment, and it would, you know, cause all sorts of logistic problems. So the pulse industry here is really very concerned that this could disrupt a trade that last year amounted to more than $1 billion.
Wow, it certainly doesn't sound like there's any cheap solution to this problem. What's the pulse industry doing about it?
Well, they have been working with the Canadian Food Inspection Agency for some time because this has kind of been on the agenda for a while. But as I said, we've been getting these exemptions. Canada has now provided India with an information package supplying the information that the Canadian Food Inspection Agency has built up over a number of years. And the CFA has been testing thousands of pea shipments from Canada and has never found this nematode that India is so worried about. So actually, the solution that Canada is offering up is that we would like India to allow the Canadian Food Inspection Agency to issue certificates assuring that the cargoes meet India's standards without the need for fumigation. And so we've shipped this information over to them. We're hoping for a quick decision because, of course, this deadline of March 31st is fast approaching. And, of course, There's a certain amount of time from the point where a ship is loaded until it arrives in India, and we don't want ships being kind of caught up in this this rule change.
Darce, it sounds like this has been a concern for India for quite a long time. Has something changed? Why is it taking this aggressive approach right now?
Yeah, well, India didn't have much room to maneuver a few years in the past few years anyways, because they've had problems with their monsoon and have had really weak crops the two previous years. But the monsoon this past summer came back quite nicely, and they had a good crop in the summer. They also plant a winter crop, which is actually the bigger crop for pulses. And acreage is way, way up. And soil moisture has been good. The from what I can see from the rain maps and so on, that actually they should have a pretty good winter pulse crop. So that's giving them a cushion. They'll still need some pulse imports, but this prospect of a big harvest there gives them some leeway and allows them to take a stronger stand on this fumigation issue.
Well, we'll certainly have to keep a close eye and see what happens there. But tell us, what else is happening in crop markets? What's happening here in Canada?
Well, Agriculture Canada brought out its first forecast for 2017 seeding plans. It sees some lower durum area, a drop of 15% from last year. Of course, last year, it was the, so far as the seeded area was concerned, I think it was the largest since 2000. So it was a really big crop, but then we had all these problems with fusarium in the durum crop. And just because of that, not only is Agriculture Canada calling, or not, sees a drop of about 15%, but some private analysts think it'll be even lower than that. They think that farmers are simply just going to want to try to give a break in this disease cycle. And also, I think the same kind of issue is affecting the forecast for lentils. With the previous 2 years, there's been really big increases in lentil acreage. But then this past year, we ran into disease problems. And so that could put a halt to these big increases in lentil acreage. Agriculture Canada is calling for a 1.5% decrease in lentil acreage.
What can we see in canola?
Agriculture Canada is calling for a relatively small, a 3% increase in canola. But again, we're kind of pushing up against the rotation limits, and we can't really see a whole lot more canola going in. And then there's also an idea that spring wheat acres could be up by 6%. And oats, maybe 7% increase. There's some pretty good bids out there for around $3 a bushel. And also Ag Canada sees more flax and more soybeans as well.
Excellent.
But, really, the whole report was kind of expected, and there wasn't a real big market reaction to this first kind of kick of the can at figuring out what acreage is going to be in the spring.
Well, bringing it around to the other factor that's going to affect acreage, weather. I know we're still thinking of snow here, but what issues around the world are affecting crop prices right now?
Yeah, well, there's always lots of concentration on how the weather in South America is, because those are the big crops that are developing during our winter. It's their spring, their summer and spring, spring and summer, rather. There was a lot of rain in Argentina back in December and into early January, and that caused a lot of concern, and it helped to lift the market through January. And now there's been some more rain over the weekend in parts of Argentina. However, the market really didn't react too much to that. I think they're kind of moving along in the maturity of the crop, and it's starting to perhaps, it's just becoming kind of an old story, this rain in Argentina issue. And one of the reasons why people are becoming a little bit less concerned is that Brazil, the neighbor to the north, has what seems to be a really good crop in its field, and it's already harvesting there. There is some showers that are affecting the harvest, providing some delays for their crop. But they were actually harvesting early anyways. They got in their crop very early, leading to an early harvest. And I believe that they're actually still ahead of where they were last year in the amount of percentage of crop that has been harvested. So anyways, the idea is that the great conditions in Brazil will offset any worries that we have in Argentina. So that's on the oilseed side. On the wheat side around the world, it did get kind of cold in Europe and the Black Sea region in some recent weeks, but the idea is that there's been enough snow there that it's been protecting the winter wheat crop, and so I'm not really seeing any ideas of big winter kill in those regions. And also in the United States, I just saw just a few minutes ago, I think there's supposed to be some rain in their southern plains area where they grow winter wheat, and so that would be good for their crop, even though all of this is still in dormancy, but you know, it's kind of a background issue. We'll get the real story on winter wheat when it starts to warm up in another month or so, and when it breaks dormancy, and then we'll see how the spring weather turns out.
So nothing else out there that would lift prices currently then. But are there any other issues that could shake things up or any wild cards that, that our listeners should be aware of?
Yeah, it's kind of a quiet time right now for crop markets. We do have a monthly USDA crop production report on Thursday. I don't know if it's going to happen with this report, but at some point, what I'm seeing from some other analysts is that at some point, USDA is going to have to adjust its forecasts to account for the faster-than-expected pace of exports, especially of soybeans. The U.S. has had a really good year so far in exporting beans. And so its supply and demand table, you know, at some point they're going to have to increase that export estimate number. And if you increase exports, then you reduce your ending stocks number. And so that could provide some support for soybean and oilseed prices, including canola. And that'd be welcome because there are other issues around the world that are kind of negative for soybeans and for oilseeds. As I've been mentioning, this big Brazilian crop that's on the way, and also palm production in Indonesia and Malaysia is supposed to be picking up later this year as it recovers from the drought that they had there last year.
Excellent. Well, thanks very much for sharing that with us, Darce.
Okay. Thanks, Sharon.
Darce McMillan is markets editor with the Western Producer, and he spoke to us today from Saskatoon. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm this week's host, Shannon Van Rays. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have right now, but join us again next week as we delve into the issues affecting Canadian farmers. For Between the Rows, I'm Shannon Van Rays.
We'd like to thank Gowan Canada, our sponsor for today's Between the Rows podcast. Remember, if you have Group 1 or 2 resistant wild oats on your farm, use Avidex or Fortress to control them. Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. If you like what you heard on today's show and you want to hear more, go to membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.